You're listening to Red Setter, your roundup of Red Camera news from the crew at fxguide.com.
Welcome, everybody, to Episode 8, Red Setter. Hey, Mike.
Hey, and it's a very exciting episode because, of course, Build 16 is out, and we're going to be discussing that in some depth, in fact, probably in a lot of depth.
I'm sure we will.
In fact, what we're going to do is our normal episode. We're going to go and do a coverage of Episode 8 news, and there's some interesting news stuff to talk about, but what we're going to do is then do a big discussion on Build 16, and we're going to cover it from two angles, and I like to kind of jokingly say we're going to discuss it from the Apple style reality distortion field that Jim has. So in other words, not that he's saying anything wrong, but we're going to discuss it from Red's point of view, which is the simplicity of 16. But actually, I'd like to go beyond that and start discussing some of the technical stuff to do with color spaces and stuff. As you know, I like to geek out, Jace.
Yeah, and I'll bring you back to reality.
Thank you very much. So we'll do that. So the simple, you know, overview, and then the more complex stuff for you. And then after that, you've got a really good Red Room this week.
Yeah, I got a great Red Room. I couldn't shut the guy up. Fantastic guy who does everything. Music, edit, shoots his own stuff. He's mad.
And then we'll be getting all of that. But first we're going to do the news. And you had promised me a theme tune for our news this week, but I presume you've been too busy with Build 16 to actually
get to it. Here's the news theme. It's exciting.
Okay. Thank you for that.
No problem.
Huge production value, no expense spared. Anyway, some sad news to kick off.
Yes, Stan Winston's passing this week. Very sad. I didn't know he was really ill, but you had something to do with Stan.
Well, we just knew that he was sick. He has been sick for some time, and had a 7-year struggle actually. With a form of cancer, but I actually visited the studios a year or two ago, and there's actually a story on FX Guide about his passing, and just, I guess, flagging the huge body of work and the enormous contribution that he's made to the industry, both visual effects and just normal filmmaking. And there's a photo we've got actually on the website of their conference room, and it's a pretty awesome testimony to his career, actually, as to
it's like 360 degrees around the boardroom,
and you know, it just gives you a hint at. I mean, he actually, I was saying this to John the other day at FX Guide, that if you go back far enough in his career, he did special effects makeup on Roots, the miniseries in 77 and stuff. So, just an enormous contribution over the years. But yeah, just have a look at that picture, and you'll get an idea of some of the amazing films.
Oh, and all of it good. Nothing, you know, every single one is just an outstanding film, an outstanding effort.
Yeah, Batman is Edward Scissorhands, Predator, Terminator, Jurassic. I mean, the list just goes on and on.
Yeah.
It really is outstanding.
No, it's a good, it's a great story.
One of my all-time favourites, Galaxy Quest.
Oh, love that film.
So, look, we don't want to start on a down note, but we did want to respectfully pay tribute to a man who we greatly admire. But let's move back to more specific Red news.
Yes, well, obviously, the big one, which we'll cover later, Build 16 announced today, which essentially, for a lot of people, is going to mean a new camera, I think. There's a lot of stuff changed, a lot of fixes, and obviously we'll go through most of that later on. But, yeah, that's obviously the big news. Another one is, they have just released 16 gig cards, which is another one. Everyone's been really sort of killing for those to be able to record without the Red drive at a reasonable time. So that'll get you 8 minutes at 4K or 40 minutes at 2K.
Now, how much are they going to be selling those 16 gigs for?
They're not out yet. They'll be out in a month, and they're $550 US.
Yeah, I want one for my 5D, my Canon 5D. They use the same cards. I have a Red card right now in my Canon 5D. They're so fast. They're great.
Don't start with
what?
Don't start with film with stills cameras.
Okay, but having said that, I mean, they've been a while coming, and I know that they were testing them. And I think the problem they had is they just couldn't get any that were actually fast enough to do. And I presume these are they've actually now found some cards, because they could get some cards that were fast enough in any build, but not enough of a yield, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
they say, well, here's the spec, they're all fast enough. They get a box in, test them all, only half of them or a quarter of them actually met the spec that they needed.
Yeah, and they're probably doing something funny with the, or probably doing something in the firmware of the card. I guess they'd have firmware in them in the card, so I'm sure that presume they'd have sort of.
Well, the real trick is that the 16 gig cards are not only going from 8 to 16 gig, but they are actually faster in read-write than the current 8 gig cards. And that's really pretty significant because, as we'll hear in Build 16, you know, the speed to the cards is a factor on what you can actually pull off, especially in the power world.
Well, there's a lot of people waiting for them, so that'll be great. I'm sure they'll sell the odd one or two.
Now, there was also something that Jim posted about Build 16 and reservation holders, wasn't it?
Yeah. Basically, anybody who's in the first 2,000, which obviously they're dealing with now, and they're getting all those cameras out, if you have, if you're a 1 to 2,000 reservation holder and you've not taken delivery of your camera, basically he's basically saying, what my producer used to say was, shit or get off the pot.
That's a lovely Australian expression, isn't it?
No, she was Canadian. But basically was that, you know, basically pay your money or lose your sort of place in the line, which is, you know, fair enough. There's a lot of other people who are desperately standing there with money ready to pay.
Would you get your $1,000 back if you?
Yes, you get your money back, of course.
So if you just say, I want to, basically they're saying, if you've been hanging off, now pay up or please get out of the line.
Yeah, well, yeah, which is kind of fair enough, because they are ready to give you your camera, and if you don't quite have your money ready, unfortunately, you need to sort of, you know, fair enough.
Yeah, I guess that's related somewhat to Epic and Scarlett, right?
Yeah, well, basically, obviously, a lot of people are wanting to get in the line for Epics, I guess. If you're a Red owner, you can be.
Yeah, but as I understand it, if I had a deposit down on a Red One, I can't just move my deposit over to an Epic and stay in the queue for Epic and not Red One.
You have to have the actual camera,
right?
I think.
Okay, so we're in line because we have a camera, but yep. If you had one and just thought, I'll just hang off until Epic, you won't sit in the queue at a low number until Epic comes out.
Exactly. If you're camera 23 or whatever, you are in. You can have that. Basically, gives that's your ticket for Epic 23.
Got it. So now, let's. Is there any more news, or can we discuss our competition winner?
Yes, we have a winner. John Pegg answered the question correctly. What is the highest ISO setting for Build 15,
which is 2,000,
so,
and somebody correctly pointed out that it's probably going to be the same in Build 16, and they were right.
It is. Okay, cool. Well, I guess we'll tackle that later, but I'm sure ASA 2,000 is I'm it's sure it's good. Exactly the same, but it probably looks better.
There you go. So so congratulations to John, and we'll be pimping your Red soon.
Yeah, well done.
Now just before we get on to our next segment, do we have any gear to review? Any new other sort of ways you can pimp your Red?
Yeah, look, I've got I'm sort of stuck in a handles and battery mount rut at the moment, because that's, you know, I think it's all partly driven because of the fact that, no offense to Red, but you know, I think there's some better ways of putting batteries and handles on this camera. And so that's why I think there's a lot of people out there making this kind of stuff. And Ronford Baker, who you'd know, Mike, who you know, tripod maker from England from way back, fantastic engineers. And I think it sort of came out of a customer saying, hey, can you build me this? And basically decided, oh, well, okay, they're pretty cool, we'll make them. Very simple, very simple, very affordable. They've got a battery mount, which is really a simple L-bracket, mounting the battery on the side, getting it away from the back, getting away from the top, where you get sort of, you know, putting your center of gravity really high if you're hand-holding, getting it away from the back where it's in the way of all the, you know, buttons and joysticks and displays. It basically puts it around on the dumb side of the camera, right in front of, if you've, say, got your Element Technica breakout box.
I was about to ask you that, because it's all very well sticking it on the side, but if it covers up your your ability to connect up for doing the monitor split. It ain't going to be very popular.
Yeah, I guess it does rely on that. Yes, I guess
so
it relies...
So if you don't have the Element Technica type thing, it's not going to be so useful because...
Well, look, it can be... It can be mount... It basically, it bolts into the top of the cheese plate on the top of the camera. So you need to have one of those.
I actually have one of those. I haven't actually ever used it, but I actually have one.
Oh, look, I think it's, you know, it's great. It's probably what should have been there.
Really? I mean, obviously Epic has that flat top, but yeah. I have a cheese board. I don't know, it just adds to the weight, I guess.
Yeah, true. I think it's just one of those things that cameras should...
I wonder if this is going to affect, if you had the battery side-mounted at the rear, the handheld operation feel, is it going to be sort of counterweighted one way or the other? I guess you could have an offset with a follow focus on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're probably going to have a monitor and follow focus and or a viewfinder on that side anyway. It's much better to be a little bit offside left to right than having weight on the top, I think.
Actually, you're right. It would counterbalance with the EVF, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you're going to have a fairly reasonably heavy viewfinder on the other side.
And how much are those kind of brackets?
It's really cheap. It's £24, which is about $900.
No, it's not.
No, it's pretty cheap. £24.50.
It used to be $900. Now we're like, you know, thanks to the US dollars adjustment.
Thank you very much. But you can mount it anywhere up and down. Basically, it's just got two hex keys on the top, so you can mount it at the back, front, you know, slip it all around, whatever's convenient.
Tell me that those are the same size Allen keys as I use for the rest of my red, and I'll be happy if I have another Allen key on my red.
I'm not sure. I'm sure Ronford thought about it.
Anyway, you have a...
So basically, it's just an L bracket. You unbolt your red battery plate from your red cradle,
yep,
and bolt it straight onto this. That's why it's so cheap.
You'll have some photos in the...
Yep.
If somebody can't imagine what we're talking about.
Yep, and the other thing they're making is some moose handles, basically just, you know, hand grips, but really simple, really adjustable, all, you know, kip locks, all the little lever locks, nice and easy to change and grab and, you know, because the whole thing about...
When do they get called moose handles?
Sometimes they're called moose handles or bullhorns or that sort of stuff.
Bullhorns I'd heard. Moose handles I hadn't. It's just pretty funny.
Which is weird from an English company because they don't have mooses.
Yes.
But what's nice is to be able to adjust it, you know, and tool free. So just basically bolts right on the front rods, nice and easy. And, you know, you do your first take. I constantly fiddle with these handles. You know, you do a take and you want to fiddle with the thing and constantly adjust it. I can't stop sort of playing with the thing. So it's nice that you don't have to get an Allen key out the whole time. £215. They've got 15mm or 19mm rods versions. So, yeah, I'll put links to that. And, yeah, so I think that's really cool. Hopefully I'll be out of my handles and battery mount phase soon.
No, that's good. I love your research on this stuff. It's great.
No, look, I think it's really, you know, I think... they got a lot of things right, but maybe the handles weren't possibly one of them.
And so, as I said, a link to that in the show notes and some photos so that you can see what they look like. And the show notes now are a downloadable PDF at fxguide.com in the podcasting area for Red Center. So that brings us to Build 16.
Right.
And look, it's been a while coming.
Yeah, it's been all the more... It feels like all the more of a while coming because there's been so much teasing going on, and look at these fantastic screenshots, and there's been a lot of tantalizing.
Yeah, and I should say it's only gone into beta. It's not like it's actually released.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, it's sort of clamoring for this thing the second that it comes out. I mean, you said at the opener that you thought it was a whole new camera. I wonder if that's overselling it a little. I think it's a new way of working with the camera, but... I mean, if we'd only ever had 2K and suddenly we had 4K, I'd say a new camera. I think there is a risk of overselling Build 16. I think it's really good. Don't get me wrong. I think there's some really interesting ways of working. I don't know. Maybe just for me, it's slightly overselling it too. But then
I guess I'm just a victim of the hype, I guess, like everybody else. So
yeah, no, I understand. And I don't disagree that it's a very, very significant release, and nor do I disagree that they've done some amazingly cool new things in it. I guess it's just I'm a little concerned about somebody who isn't actually a Red owner hearing new camera kind of thing and saying, you know, wow, just show me exactly why it's insanely better, and you just go, well, now,
yeah.
And then you start getting into the nitty-gritty, and they're like, couldn't I do that before kind of thing?
Well, I guess what I'm expecting is a lot of fixes, a lot of corrections of missing stuff, a lot of corrections of possible, you know, call them faults.
Well, let's do the summary version first. Let's do the happy version. Okay. That is to say that Red's view on this, I think, I don't work for Red and I can't speak on their behalf, but my interpretation of their point of view is that they wanted to simplify the process of working with Red. They wanted to make Red easier for people to get their head around in certain aspects of the filming, especially in terms of some of the ways it worked. Now, I never had a problem with how it was before, but I get that some people did and that they found it all a bit too daunting, and especially when it got into the areas of colour spaces and LUTs and stuff. Now, for me, I just, you know, we were talking about this with a camera operator yesterday. They were like, you know, this isn't a toy. It's a professional piece of kit, and, yeah, you know, that just comes with the turf. So I don't think, you know, save it suddenly having autofocus and auto aperture stuff that we're going to be getting into this whole realm of it being super simple. And so, again, I call it the happy version because, for me personally, I always want to go beyond this to find out. But let's just go through the summary of key points, and then we'll come back and get more in depth. So I guess the first thing is that Build 16 is an irreversible build, Jason. Right. You put it on and there ain't no going back.
Yeah, so clearly they've got faith in it.
Oh, yeah, no, and it's stable. And we've had it for some time and helping with some of the testing. It's really good, and I can say that from using it. And so it's not like we just downloaded it today and haven't touched it at all. So I've shot with it, I've shot with sound with it, I've edited it together and been really happy with the results. But all in a testing mode. Now, in putting the camera through its paces and saying that we go to a whole new build, we should also flag the fact that as of today, and this is, you know, constantly changing, so even by the time this goes out, it may have changed, but there is only Red Alert. There is no Scratch, and there is no Red Cine for processing the frame. So when we say it's beta, it is beta, because you would not, I think, want to go onto a production with this until you got some more supporting software behind the scenes, because you're back to where we were on build one in terms of only having Red Alert for doing your post-production pipe and moving forward.
So we'll not work with a Scratch?
Not right now, because Scratch and Red Cine both need to update the Red Node, the code handling hub in the center of the... Now, obviously, they're both doing that, and it's happening. But, you know, we're just speaking to the immediacy of right today. That so if you're super busting out to try 16 and you go load it up and you've got a rental job tomorrow, and they go, well, great, you know, what am I going to process? Well, actually, we're just back to Red Alert. You know, it's not going to be a popular move. Now, I'm not criticizing, I'm just saying that's how it is.
So is there a timeline for when Scratch and all that
stuff? As I understand it, they're going to try and get Cine out even by the weekend or early next week.
Okay.
But it's just that at the moment we're on Red Alert only. Now, I love Red Alert, but it's not, you know, hardcore production feature pipeline-y stuff. So, you know, word of warning. Even if it was out, you'd want to give Red Cine a little bit of time to make sure there aren't, you know, bugs and problems. And so it is beta, and let's just not deny it.
Sure, yeah. But the non-reversible function of it is, that's a bit of a...
No, totally.
Think twice.
And so you do the whole thing, you download, and in our case, went through a few complicated but not difficult steps to update the software, but it was non-trivial, including the, you know, redoing the black shading and stuff. And then you have a camera at the other end, which... has a bunch of really great features, not least of which is the HD 1080 playback. So we've got 444 dual link playback, as well as you can get a clean 720 preview without the menus, or you can just get dual link or single link HD out of it. So having HD playback on set, I think for you, must be a really cool thing.
Because there has always been a bit of a gotcha with what monitors you can plug into it. There's always a bit of sort of cut off, and you had to sort of have more PC kind of monitors, or... Am I right?
It depends if you want to see all the menus. I mean, on the monitor splits that we've been using, so for example, if we have a CineTel monitor on set, we were getting a 720 feed into it, and of course the CineTel monitor is more than capable of handling multiple streams of full HD. So it was nice that we could now plug a CineTel in, say, and get dual link into it, because we, in our case, can use the CineTel's internal scope and vectorscope and waveform monitor for checking signals. So it's nice to have, you know, a high quality signal to feed it in the first place.
Sure, yeah. But Video Village just wants, we're just, you know, they just want the square.
Well, yeah, see, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, you either want the video split to be serving the function of just want to see what's going on at PalRes,
yeah,
because you're looking at the performance, which is completely valid, or you want to do green screen and you're wanting to check scopes and levels and do all sorts of stuff. So, you know, to a certain extent, you're still going to need a down converter because you're either going to be down converting from 720 or from full HD, but it's nice that it's doing that.
Right.
Okay. The other thing I mentioned earlier was that, you know, the new cards coming out and the speed of those was significant, because one of the things that's not running on, for example, our camera here is 25 frame a second 4K 16:9 to the CF cards. Now, it's not running because it's a bug. It's just running because it says on the menus, pops up and says, you know, media not fast enough.
Needs to be a red drive if you want to shoot 25 frames, 4K, 69.
Yeah, and so that was a big bugbear, some of the 16:9 stuff in the earlier builds. And so it led to this situation that people, I certainly was recommending people just not shoot 25 frame a second, 16:9 work, full stop. And I know of more than a couple of people that got into strife over wanting to just shoot 16:9, because 2:1 is what Red kind of natively started out with, and many of us that started with Red in the early days just fell in love with 2:1. But people coming to it late just go, well, I just want 16:9. That's the most obvious format. And then you get into these problems about the data rates, and if the media isn't fast enough, it's going to flag it and not let you record it. Now,
see, well, the native chip, right, is 4K 16:9. It's a 16:9 chip, isn't it?
Well, it's actually, the chip is actually, there's more of the chip than you're getting, because that's how you have the shoot around, obviously, right?
Yeah. Yes, it's 5K chip.
Yeah,
sorry.
But I guess the thing is, it's just how you want to use it. Mm. And the thing that I found is that most of the testing, most of the people, most of the community were approaching it at 24 frames a second or 23.98, 4K, 2:1. They then went to 16:9, but still they're doing 24 frames a second. And that 4% difference is significant in terms of data flow when going to the slower CF cards.
Well, for me, I would normally shoot 16:9 for my sort of broadcast stuff, and I want to have the biggest image possible, because I want to have the most depth of field possible, and I don't want to have to go to 3K or have to go to 2:1 and then extract my 16:9 out of the middle of that. You know what I mean?
Well,
I want it all.
All right, but let me call you on that for a second, right? Because you say that you want, you know, the most that you can get, and I hear you, except for I would then say to you, but you're not going to be doing stuff at 4K, right? So why does it matter extracting a 16:9 2K out of a 2:1 4K image, because you're not going to be finishing your work.
No, I'm not going to be, but it's the crop factor.
But yeah, okay.
If I want to finish on 16:9,
you want to shoot 16:9.
I want to shoot 16:9. I want to have the biggest sort of, essentially use as much of the sensor as possible. Essentially using the biggest piece of film as possible.
Yeah,
and not have to then use shoot 2:1. And then take a 16:9 out of that. Even that is, it's not a lot, you know, you're talking sort of 20 or 30% or something, but it'd be just nice to shoot as big a piece of negative, I guess, as possible. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And it makes perfect sense. And I guess I was recommending for people that were starting to freak, it's like, just shoot 3K and then you can do whatever you want.
But the point is, I can now do that, but I just can't do it on a CF card.
Correct, and we expect that when the new CF cards come out, that may change, because we're only 4% out there. So if these new 16s are running faster, as they say, then we should be able to take those to doing doing the faster data rates.
One of the other things about the 4K 16:9, which was meant to be coming, was the fact that you would get proxies for that.
Yeah, so what happens now is we actually get a P, an M, an H, and an F. And this isn't actually really Build 16 stuff, but it came out just before Build 16.
Did it? Okay.
Yeah, so that we now have full... Now, the reason that this is significant is that if I'm shooting... I think I'm right in saying that. I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that. we have the ability to shoot 2K. Well, before you had, you know, P, M, and H, right, which was like proxy, mid, and high. But the higher one was still half. Well, half of 4K is 2K, so you're okay in Final Cut. But what if you were shooting 2K and you wanted 2K in Final Cut? You only got in 1K.
Yeah.
And so that's why we want the proxy. And so that's, we now have 4 QuickTime reference movie files per R3D file.
Yeah. It's an issue for me because my editor uses Avid, and he would basically just imports the proxies and cuts off that.
And if you're shooting 4K, it'd be fine to do the 2K proxy and keep going. But if you shot down to 2K, you wouldn't want to suddenly, you want to be able to at least work at 2K.
Right, but beforehand, I think at 4K there was no proxies at all.
No, it was just at 4K. It was the 2K.
Okay.
The other thing that's changed is that the file naming structure has changed to give you unique file names. So, for example, I'm looking at some R3Ds now. So it's A002_C003, which is what it was before. Then there's the date, so in my case 06, 07, whatever. And then it's got, in my case, RW. Now, that last two RW bit is a letter, a hex number inserted into the file name to give it a unique ID. So we're trying to get away from having the situation that you may have stumbled across having multiple shots with the same actual file name. So that file name goes into the magazine name effectively and also into the R3D file name. So just a slight change to the naming convention that they're using, but the takeout of that is you're much less likely to have problems with clips clobbering each other.
You can't actually name the files, though, can you?
No, you're not naming the files here. You can change that name by changing the camera, like, for example, not being the A camera, being the B. Or
right, yeah, sure.
But you don't get to name it,
whatever.
Jason's favourite one, honest, _ final.
That now, would get confusing later on.
The next one on our list of things that we really like is one that you really are enthusiastic about, isn't it, Jason?
Which one's that?
That would be the pre-record.
Pre-record. How awesome. You can now do a 10 or a 30-second pre-record, which I think, I don't know why, I just think that's really cool. If you're just missing something, or if you're not rolling, or if someone says, for just those last minute, especially, I suppose, if you're a doco guy or your wildlife guy, I guess, you always know that, I suppose, essentially, you're always recording. It's always recording the previous 30 seconds. So you could, I guess, if you're putting the, say, nature guy hat on, if you're sort of got the camera set up there, at that, when are the lions going to attack or whatever?
Well, definitely on set with babies and animals or something. Yes, you're absolutely right. That idea that it's pre-recording so that you go, oh, that's what I want, hit the button, and the previous 30 seconds is
will be recorded and put to the drive.
So,
I guess that would be right, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no, totally. It's really cool.
Yeah. I just think that'd be fantastic if you're always on pre-record. I guess you're going to... I just think that'd be cool.
Yeah, no, it is.
I've yet to work out why, but I think that's pretty clever.
So let me just explain how that would work, because it's going to freak you out a little bit when you see the R3D files, because what happens is that it's going to record a hunk of R3Ds. So instead of having your one R3D file, you'll have multiple R3Ds. Now, all of the R3Ds in this folder, of which there's, say, like 10, are individual, like, say, seconds that are recorded. So what happens is you put a one-second hunk... I mean, you don't. It does this automatically. A one-second hunk of video and audio is recorded, and then that's closed as an R3D file. The next 1 second is laid in after it, so you'll have that's 2, and the next second after that is 3. And when you get to the end of the 10 seconds, because you've got on a 10-second loop, it deletes the first one and then records the 11th one, repeats the second one, records the 12th.
Right.
And so you're going to have a bunch of little R3D files, which, of course, when you bring it into the software, will all be interpreted just as one R3D file.
Right.
It just means that, and you obviously shouldn't be freaked out by this, is that when you look in your folder for an R3D file, you'll suddenly discover, well, there's a big R3D, which might have 2 gig, and then a whole lot of little 20 meg kind of R3Ds in front of it. And all those little ones are the rolling pre-records that have been either made and deleted or about to be. So so it just means you get a host of little R3Ds, and after that, it should make no difference, right? It should be one QuickTime wrapper, one everything else. But
cool. The main thing is if the lion strikes or the child does something fantastic,
you've
we got it.
Yeah,
awesome.
Totally.
No, that's really clever.
Okay, so then, and this one is one that I'm really enthusiastic about, is that the EVF itself, the dial on the side of it, actually does something useful now.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't mind that before I had to go to the back of the camera to do ISO and exposure, though that is now on the EVF. And I can imagine that would be much better if I was a DOP in handheld mode, that you could adjust exposure actually through the viewfinder.
Yeah.
So that's great. The one that is actually significant for me is audio levels, because I always had this problem in the previous Build 15 that the menu for adjusting the levels was actually not on screen at the same time that the menu showed the levels.
Well, yeah, the whole audio thing is always dragged a bit behind the visual.
So, okay, well, I want to adjust the level of your mic right now. I'll just go to the sub-menu that lets me do that. Wait a second, I can't see your level. I'll go back to the level so I can see the level. Wait, now I can't get to the knob to adjust it.
Yeah, and it's probably 5 steps deep into the menu or something to get there.
Yeah, no, I understand that. So anyway.
Okay, cool.
I don't
know. So basically, you can go to audio level, see the audio level, adjust it up and down, get it right, get out of there.
But only on the EVF using that side adjustment knob. And of course, not in line mode. In line mode, it's going to not be adjustable. So I think most people are going to have a line input to the camera at some point and. Or just, you know, set the audio from the separate audio mixing desk and then just have this in there for guide audio.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you were to have an interview where you'd mic'd up, say, Jason and I, and that we were recording audio from some wireless mics directly in or whatever, some mics cabled into the camera,
yeah,
it would be nice while looking through the viewfinder that the single operator, again, could adjust those audio levels and...
Oh, look, yeah, I'm not quite sure why you'd run it that way. You'd always have to have some sort of mixer or, you know, you don't want to be,
thinking,
I don't know.
Somebody was doing a Docker
I guess so, yeah, if you're doing Docker and you sort of, you know,
indie
I guess.
Filmmaker, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like I suppose just putting a boom mic on the front of the thing or, yeah, you got one wireless mic guy. Yeah,
just the strap-ons shotgun mic for the Rebel DV look. Of,
yeah.
I shouldn't say that, it's not the Rebel DV look. I meant the DV look.
Yes, that's of, right. Well, I guess so. Well, I think a lot of Docker stuff, they probably would do that. They'd probably have just a mic on the top capturing ambience, and then you'd have your boom swinger or your talent would have a wireless mic on them, I suppose, and then you'd split tracks and have one on the left and one on the right.
Yeah, no, totally. Also, another big one in this build is the fact that you can now have a tonal map. So the SD cards, which, you know, we hacked before, are now actually legally available to be used. So you can create a look, stick it in, and load that look up from the card, and then that will allow you to affect what the video village is seeing on the split back out the back.
So that's basically, that's affecting the essentially, it's you can give your onset footage a look.
In terms of, yeah, like not obviously affecting the raw data, but affecting the you know, like a tone map of what you're looking at.
And so how do you set that look then, essentially? You take a still frame and put it into your laptop and play around with it? Or?
Well, yeah, you set up stuff on your laptop, then you take it up. Though you can actually save something on the camera out to the SD and reload it.
Yep.
And in an upcoming app, we'll get into that because there's quite a lot there and further stuff to do with monitoring that I just don't think we're going to get... I'd like to spend more time on.
Yeah.
And we can give you some more examples.
Yep, that'd be good, because I think it's quite an interesting thing to, you know, if you've got a specific look in mind, it's always quite nice to, you know, to show the video village what you're... what you've got in mind while you're shooting it.
No, totally. And I think it's an area that is going to have a lot more growth in coming weeks and months.
Yeah.
Big one for me, you can now actually charge your iPod on the Red camera.
Awesome.
Finally, we've been
Fantastic.
Waiting for this one. No, the USB port has actually got active power. So you can, in our case, we actually have one of those USB lights. It's a little light on a flexible cable, effectively.
Yeah, little gooseneck LED. So if you're sort of checking, pulling focus or checking your lens while you're, or plugging in stuff on the side of the camera in the dark studio, just like every other camera, you can plug in a lens light.
Yeah, a lens light.
Awesome.
It sounds stupid, but actually it's quite helpful.
Yeah,
I guess we skipped over it when we were talking about the dial exposure stuff on the EVF, but you can actually program a lot of the keys now, like the buttons on the camera.
Right.
So the ones that were always deemed to be programmable buttons but had fixed assignments can now have variable assignments put in, which is, you know, I think is good. And one of those has always, and probably the most interesting for me, has been the zoom button. Click for, you know, double a picture for zoom. And,
oh, awesome.
And we've joked before, haven't we, that nobody has ever shot with the Red that hasn't accidentally gone to roll being zoomed in.
Yeah, and gone, hang on, something's not right. Something's not right.
I really like this shot. It's really great. Mm-hmm. You're actually looking at the framing of the zoom picture.
Yeah.
Not to say you couldn't have cut that from the file, but it's not what you're actually recording. It's only the middle bit of what you're recording.
So finally now, if you're punched in just on the focus check or you... then you actually get an X in the middle of your frame, which is great.
Okay,
very simple.
Which brings us a couple more quick ones. The boot time.
Right.
I think Red's claiming about 68 seconds. We actually clocked ours at 63, so we must have a fast one. But
what was it before?
A couple of minutes, depending on what build you're on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's gone. It's basically like half what it was.
It's still a long time.
It is, I guess. You're only talking about that, though, not on magazine changes, but on battery changes.
Yeah.
And some people have actually built special rigs to have that as hot wire. And of course, yes, it doesn't happen at all.
One of my little things to review in a couple of coming apps is basically sort of swap over. And there's a two or three sort of swap over rigs. You can basically have two batteries mounted. And so basically, if you're swapping a battery, you're always keeping one on the camera, so you don't have to go through the startups.
So now, there are a bunch of other things that Red have put out in their publicity and stuff, and I'm not meaning to, you know, skip over them. There are errors that are fixed and bugs that are fixed and stuff, and that's all great. I guess we've given you our, from actually using it perspective, the things that excited us the most. Feel free to, you know, if you're really enthusiastic about the fact that there are new guides added and that there's 185 safe title or something, and you think that's something we should have mentioned, well, feel free to email us. But I'm just trying to give you our perspective on, because Red's published a list of everything that's in there, but I guess not hit that list in terms of a weighted priority of how amazingly cool it is. Which brings me to what I consider to be the biggest thing of all, which is the changes to the color space and workflow dynamics. Now, what do we mean by that? It's that, and this is where we get this deviation split between my world and or your world as part of the Red Center community and the Red world as part of the publicity machine that is Red. And what we mean by this is that in some respects, what's happened is the world just got a lot simpler for some people because there's now some new options and ways of working that make it simpler. And in another sense, it's got more complex because there's now even more control over what you're doing. And of course, more control leads to a grasp of more understanding what's going on. So let me give you the quick summary version, and then I'll get into the deep version. So the quick summary version is that there's some slight changes, say, to Red Alert that has moved the color space down from the top of the menu palette pull-down to actually being in the main body of the UI. So in Red Alert, the new version, there's now color space listed right above output LUT and gamma space. Now, that in of itself isn't a change other than a UI change to the application. That used to be just something that was in a pull-down. But, Jace, what's different is the options under color space. So before we had Rec 709...
and a whole bunch of other weird stuff.
Rec 709, camera RGB, and camera RGB 2. And then we had... that's it. That was it. Those are the three color spaces. And we just tended to leave them on camera RGB 2 because, for a start, that menu was up the top under, I think, presets before. No, it was under settings, sorry, where the processor selection is. Mm-hmm. And it was like, yeah, who goes up there? Let's not touch that. We'll just use all the stuff in the main window, not up in the Apple pull-down menu. And then in output LUT and gamma space, we have, in addition to red space, also a thing called red flex. We've lost PD log 985 because no one ever used it anyway. And we've still got red log, rec 709, and linear light. Now, I'm going to come back and explain this in a second. Then we've got just basically a cleaned up UI in red alert. Now, there are some other things I'm skipping over, but this is the basic thrust of it. So the big difference is this idea of a red space and the idea of red flex and red space in the context of the output LUT and the way you're working. Now, in red, simple, you don't want to know about it. And quite frankly, if you like that, you're probably not even listening to this podcast. You'd be like, oh, great, I have this new option, which is red space. I'll put it in red space, and then I'll set it to red flex, and then the pictures will just look better. And when I change the ISO value, it'll work really cool. And it will. That's all true. And it will work in a cool fashion, in inverted commas, by the fact that if you say, oh, you know what, I shot this 320, but I want to actually be on 1000 ISO, and I'm in red flex space, yeah, that suddenly the picture just looks brighter and better.
Yeah.
But nothing's clipped that wasn't clipped before, and, you know, nothing that was in the blacks. It's like a dynamic range adjuster that seems to do exactly what you want it to do. You up the ISO, and it just looked like you had more light. Now, of course, there is going to be noise in the blue and stuff, but generally speaking, for the novice, yeah, if you're in red space as your color space and you're in red flex, as you up and down your ISO value, you tend to just get like somebody turned the lights up and down.
Yeah.
Now, there is a bit more noise, but it's better than it was before.
Yeah, it doesn't.
But yeah. Things don't clip out.
No.
It's pretty cool, and it looks normal, right?
Look like an exposure. It doesn't look like you're changing exposure. The exposure seems still correct. It just looks, as you say, like
like there was more light. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, to use an analogy, that's this is the simple version. We're going to get to the techie one in a sec. Okay, now if I change the exposure, I get a different result. If I change the exposure up a bunch, then it actually looks like the shot's a bit more overexposed. Now, this is, in of itself, a pivotal difference. The exposure has had a different response to the image than adjusting the ISO. Now, if you go to simple film 101 for a second, ISO should be a stop difference, say.
Yeah.
And exposure should be a stop difference. So if I change the stop difference between ISO and exposure, it's one of the three things that I can change to affect how much light's going through. So you kind of, in the film world, think of them as being kind of equivalent. Now, I know that they're not, and I know that you're obviously going to have more noise if you have a higher ISO film. But as a rule of thumb, right, if I change the shutter, so I go from like a 1/48th to a 1/100th, I'm expecting, you know, to change the amount of light that's coming in. So 1/48th, 1/100th is kind of half as much. So that's there you go.
Yep.
If I change exposure up a stop, that's a stop. And if I change the ISO from 300 to 600 or 320 to 640, that's a stop. Okay, that's how it used to work. And so I used to say, for example, that if you wanted to bring your highlights back in Red Alert, then just, you know, adjust your ISO down a notch. And I would take mine from 320 down to 250, and I would pull back a little bit of detail in the highlights. If you are in Red Flex, that no longer happens. Does that make sense? So whereas before, you would get back some highlights if you adjusted your ISO down, don't get that anymore, because it's not... Red Flex is like a dynamic exposure compensator. I'm getting techie, so I'm going to go back to simple speak again.
Yeah.
So exposure, you know, looks like you've changed the exposure, and ISO looks like you changed how much light was lighting up the room.
Yeah.
And that is the simple version of working with Red for Dummies, that you go, okay, well, I'll work in Red Space because somebody told me to, and I'll sit in Red Flex because then it'll just make the pictures look good, and I'll just adjust the ISO and exposure to be whether I wanted more light on the day or wanted an overexposed or underexposed look.
Yeah, I think that's the key last sentence there. Well, the rest was, whatever. it does. It essentially does give it an underexposed or an overexposed look without actually muddying things up or blowing highlights or whatever. It does seem to sort of, just in my initial...
And it's that bit that is the why people say it's like having a whole new camera. Like, that is the... Right there. That's the moment at which you look at this and go, okay, everything else we discussed was bug fixes, things that they promised that were now online, useful, you know, took your advice, I'm glad I can get a USB light on it, blah, blah. Then you hit this one and you go, okay, that's significantly different. And at this point, I guess one could reasonably argue that you might have expected from another camera supplier that to be in their second generation camera, that they have this whole new way of working.
Sure.
So I get the analogy. And
but if you're not using Red Alert, if you're going straight to scratch once it's enabled, the color space that the camera's using is
okay. Is so different. Now you're inviting me to go to the tech bit, because I can explain what I just
didn't
explained.
Know I was doing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But before I do that, do you have any other questions about where we are with the simple version? So the simple version is there's a new way of working.
Yep.
It's not to use Rec 709. It's not to use Log, though they are still there, or most of them are.
Yep.
It's to use Red Flex, and Red Flex is a adjuster which is going to cause your exposure and your ISO to actually produce different image-looking things.
Yeah.
Like, whereas before, and in the logic of textbooks, they are in fact the same.
Yeah, more flexible, more control, basically.
Well... Yeah, I guess in a sense there's more control, but you could also argue in a sense that they provide more of what would be intelligence from the program instead of second-guessing what you wanted. I don't know at this point that's explicitly more control, so in terms it's more smarts. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not giving you another knob to adjust. It's giving you, I'm going to interpret what I think you want and give it to you.
Yeah, I guess there was a lot of, you know, before, and I only had minimal sort of playing with Red Alert, because that's sort of the other side. you know, it was almost like change something, just, whoa, that's no good, it's more blown out, and move it the other way, and, oh, that's no good, oh, great, well, now I've got I can see the dark stuff, but now the highlights are blown out, and so it was sort of choose which bit you like, and now it sort of seems like it's, to me, just what I can see now, it seems a bit more flexible.
Okay, so now we're going to go into geekdom, and I'm going to try and obviously not lose you guys, but I think that there's a lot to be said for Red Center as a podcast, being able to explain things to you guys that is more technical than the simple. Try and, as I say, use you, Jason, as a yardstick for normality.
Yep.
But what we'll try now is going into this with a bit more, and we're going to obviously happy to answer questions. You want to send us emails and stuff, and in FXPhD, we go into this enormous length and give you files and everything else because, you know, that's what PhD does, right? But in explaining images via only the wireless, I will now try to endeavor to explain what's going on. Okay, so let's back up a stage and say everything we said is true, but I want to explain why it's going on. So the first thing is the color space, right? So what is the color space selection? Why do I have a Rec 709 color space, a camera RGB, and a red space?
Good question.
And what the hell is this color space thing anyway?
Exactly.
And I think at a basic level, that's a question that people do ask, and then they say, well, you know, I'm just going to leave it on red space, and that just seems to work. And I understand that that's good for some people, but I also know that a lot of really, you know, bright people that are listening to this podcast that want to go beyond that. So here we go. So the color space is this. The camera is going to shoot an image of colors based on the sensor. So it's going to have a natural kind of R, G, and B component, and that those natural colors that they pull out are a subset of what colors I can have from the camera. And every camera works like this. We've discussed it before. And you matrix. So you put a matrix on there that says, well, okay, I know I've only got this green, this red, and this blue, but, you know, if I mix them around a bit, get a bit of this and a bit of that, then I'm going to extend out from my camera's inherent sensor color space to a color space that you say Rec 709. Okay, now what does that mean? It means that if you imagine you could have somehow a two-dimensional flat drawing of all colors, and you've probably seen these in textbooks. They look like a thumbnail with a, you know, purple in one corner, red in the other, and green at the top.
Yeah, a graph.
Yeah, and in that graph, you've often seen triangles sitting in the middle. Okay, so what happens is this. You say, of all conceivable colors that you could mathematically get to, quite frankly, we're not going to get all of them. We're not, you know, we think we get them all, but we don't really. The camera gets a subset, which is a normal thing that any camera like a Genesis or whatever does, and then we matrix that out to a color space that is, say, Rec 709. What is color space? Color space is literally all the colors in my space that I can get to. So in my little universe, in my room, in my head, in my camera, I can represent these colors. And they seem like a lot, right? But obviously they're not every color known to man. Otherwise, you wouldn't have this idea of having colors outside gamut. Gamut, the definition of the word gamut is just the, you know, the colors I can actually get to, the colors that I can define. So there may be a super saturated red that you can never digitally reproduce. You can sometimes reproduce different colors in print than you can in video, for example. And so they have different gamuts. A cinema projected piece of film has a gamut of colors it can display. The monitor that you have is a gamut of colors that you can display. It's like all the colors this monitor can have. And even though it seems like you can do any color, you can't. You can only do a range of them. You with me so far?
Yep.
Okay, so now...
I think so.
So I'm going to say, okay, so I'm going to take my basic set of colors that are coming from my sensor, and I'm going to move to a thing called the color space that I'm working in. And a bunch of clever guys in white coats and lab pocket protectors define this thing called Rec 709, which is a color space. It's a definition of all colors that we call HD video colors. They're the colors that HD video can actually represent. So we do a matrixing, and in Red Alert, there's a little button that says matrix, and it takes the sensor numbers and turns them into normal Rec 709. That's what the matrixing does. We sort of know that from earlier podcasts. So what one do I go to? Well, if you...
Why give us a choice?
Why give us a choice? Okay, so the camera itself has its own gamut or range of colors that it can do. Mm. We go to some other sensible set, and we used to just go and leave the color space that it worked in as camera RGB or camera RGB2 if you were being precise in the previous version of Red Alert. Now, they say, oh, well, you can also... And we had Rec 709, but we didn't go there in the color space, and I'll tell you why in a second. We just left it at camera RGB2, didn't touch that button, and happily kept on working. Okay, now they've given you red space. So red space is a new definition, not by boffins in white coats at Simpty, but by super cool hip dudes in black leather jackets at Red, that that gives the range of colours that they're going to call Red's space. It's Red's definition of Rec 709, but it's not 709, it's just, you know, like you call it Jim's space or Graham's preferred set of colours that he likes to hang out in space. Yep. Okay, now, so if you
again,
think about
why
this,
give us a choice?
Okay, because you're going to see this in a second. Okay. But the thing about this, it's really, really significant, right, is if you turn off the matrixing button in your Red Alert program, yeah,
yep,
then Red Space ain't going to do anything. Because what's the Red Space? It's going from where I was to this space via the matrix. You turn the bloody matrix off, it can't do anything, right?
Yeah.
You disable the whole concept of having a color space.
Right.
And do you want to turn the matrix off? Well, no, not really. Matrixing is what every camera does, right? Every friggin' digital camera does a matrixing. It's just that normally you can't get in under the hood to touch it. So we're saying, okay, that makes sense. I now understand that matrixing comes as the first thing that I do. And if you want to be really strict about it, that DRXing actually happens in there as well. But let's ignore that. So in just looking at the user interface of Red Alert, you suddenly realize that the layout of the user interface of Red Alert is not the chronological order in which the signal is processed. So you have to get your head around the fact that the UI is just laid out the way the UI is laid out. That little matrixing button should sit somewhere under color space and right above output LUT if you were trying to do it in chronological order, but we're not, so that's fine. But yeah, so assuming the matrixing is on, the matrixing is the color space I'm going to, and hence color space, I can pick what my target is. Mm-hmm. Now, if you pick the target of red space, you got a better jumping off platform for the next step. If you pick the color space of Rec 709, you've already kind of gone down video HD path.
Right.
Not such a good jumping off point if you want to go to film out.
Okay.
Not crap. I'm just talking, you know, generally speaking, better off to be at a nice interim jumping off point for where we want to go to.
Right.
And Red said, we've got a good, you know, based on our sensor and our understanding of the world, we've got a better interim jumping off point. So take your raw camera data, matrix it to our Red space. Could use camera RGB if you want. And there you go. Now, there was, I guess, somebody could have called Red Space Camera RGB3 or something if you wanted to, but that wouldn't really adequately describe it. So let's now just assume that we think that Red knows what they're doing. Graham Natras is a great guy and knows what he's doing. So let's assume he's got that right, which I think he has. Yeah. So now we leave that at Red Space. Now, we don't have to think about that again, right? We now have the range of colors that we're going to work with to do your grade. So me as a boffin, I set red space because I know what I'm doing. I know you're lucky to go to film. I think it's a good interim place to put my base data in terms of colors that are available for doing any grade that you want. And now I move into sort of creative choices. So the next thing is the output LUT or gamma space. So what is that? Okay, now this is where it becomes only slightly more complicated than it was. Before, I might say Rec 709. So I now forget about color space for a second and just say, I want all my video images to be the Rec 709 color space. In other words, I might have previewed that on set.
Yep.
So I want it to look the same as it was on set. So I'm going to make it 709, and there are all the colors that HD can do. It's still 12-bit linear. It's all good. It's just that's the look, if you like. The look is Rec 709. Now, you could say, oh, well, Mike, I want to do log stuff, and I want to go back to using PD685. No problem. Now I'm going to log. So the output from the Red Alert is log files, and it's taken my sort of, you know, decoding of the chip and said, great, let's turn all these now into log, and that's the output file you take, and you take it into a, I don't know, whatever you like, really,
yep,
base light, and just grade the shit out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, so now the, so then, nothing's changed.
In which case, you would switch off the matrix and...
No, you'd leave them on. Because okay. The color space in the matrix is an important step that every camera does.
Yep.
It's just we have the ability to get under the hood and switch it off or pick a color space. No one's ever done that before. No one's ever let you pick where the camera decoded its, you know, secret decoder ring chips to. It just, you know, did something under the hood. You didn't know what.
Yeah, all of those cameras and your digital SLR, all of that sort of stuff essentially takes the raw data from the chip and then adds some kind of processing. Even if you're shooting raw, it's going to add some kind of processing.
And that's
before
the matrixing.
It puts it down on the card.
Now we're still in effectively raw mode. We're now going to work out whether we're going to put it out as a TIFF, a log, what are we going to do? So now we kind of, I guess the first stage, as you've accurately said, that color space and matrixing stage, is like making up your raw file. Like, no one thinks that the RAW file that comes off my Canon camera is actually the RAW file. it's a, you know, a file that's been made called RAW. So to a sort of sense, that's what's going on here. Okay, so now I'm going to say I've got these new modes, red space and red flex, in my output LUT. What are they? And why do I need them? And this is where the magic happens. Not the first one, selecting red space, just enables the second one to fully sort of be cool. So you now go to, let's assume we've, you know, we all know what red log is and Rec 709 and output logs. We now have these two, red flex and red space. So let's look at red space first, right? So red space is red's, you know, U-Bute, let's interpret what the world looks like. And here's the important one. In that red space, which is kind of a normal place to work without it being super clever, if I change the ISO from 320 to 640, in other words, I have a stop difference, and then I change the exposure the other way to have a stop difference, two cancel each other out, and we come back to where we started.
Yep.
So that's what I expect, right? Like, that's film school stuff. Go back to 320 ASA, go back to no exposure differences, image hasn't changed, go the other way and halve the ISO and double the exposure, haven't changed. They're working like we expect from film school. So that's normal red space. Now I go to red flex. Now I kick the whole red workflow into, you know, I love these guys and I want to drink their bathwater department, because what it says is, I understand that what you want to do actually is be able to increase, you know, how much light it looked like it had in the picture, as I mentioned earlier. So what's it doing? Well, it's actually nailing down effectively the white point at the top, so the highlights, effectively nailing down the blacks, and then just shifting the middle stuff around. So you say to me,
yeah,
I'd like the ISO to be at 640, and the highlights don't suddenly go off and clip,
yep,
and the blacks don't shift,
yep,
but the mid all gets moved around.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's, I guess, kind of equivalent to a gamma operation. We're kind of used to that. If you lift the gamma on a telecine or curves in Photoshop.
Exactly what I was going to say. It's like lifting the middle part of the curves in,
yeah,
Photoshop.
But imagine lifting the curves when somebody spent a week fine-tuning that little curve so that it was the most amazing little adjustment of a curve in... Yeah, that's what we're talking about, right? It's not just a simple gamma adjustment, but you can sort of think of it a bit like that. Okay, but the big, big difference here is that whereas before on red space or on Rec 709, if I'd adjusted that ISO down to, say, 200, I'd have shifted the highlights well down. Now the highlights are still remaining where they are.
Yeah, exactly. You have to sort of make that choice, you know, which bit do I want, which bit of the picture do I want, I want to keep before.
And this is where that trick comes in, because Red Flex has now treating the ISO and the exposure differently. When it does an exposure change, it radically shifts it. Now, let me give you some just solid numbers, because these are really easy to understand. Imagine I shot a picture and I had a red, you know, object in there, like a logo, and the red value was 0.35 on the, and I sampled it off in Red Alert. Okay, so if I, say, adjusted it with exposure, so I wanted it to look overexposed and wound the exposure up, that red would shoot up to 0.97 with three stops difference. Now, that's what you expect, right? The red is obviously going to go up because I've just changed the exposure. But if I do it with the ISO, it's only going to go to 0.84. So it's actually done a completely different operation. They've both lifted, but whereas one is going to look quite overexposed, three stops over is going to look overexposed, the other adjustment, the ISO adjustment, doesn't. The other ISO adjustment still looks kind of right, and it's less even overall, and it's lifting.
It's probably closer to maybe pushing or pulling film.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is why Red is claiming that it's simpler, and it is, because you go, well, I just want this to look overexposed. Okay, just the exposure button. I want it to look like we had more light on the day. Well, use the ISO.
Yeah.
And that's all true. I mean, that's none of that's crap. But if you really want to understand what's going on, we have to go just one more tiny step. So if you can walk with me this last bit, you'll get there. Okay, so the way that a camera works, a camera in the digital SLR sense, is it has an ISO. And for a lot of us, we tend to think of the ISO as being like gain, like analog gain. Okay, and so we've talked about that before, that on my digital stills camera, if I have a really, really, really good, you know, state-of-the-art, new, expensive Nikon, I can change the ISO up and get not much noise in the image, and it's amazing. And it has a complicated analog and digital adjuster. Okay, in red, we know there is no gain on the sensor. So what's happening is that in the red space, you're doing effectively an analog gain. This is an analogy. And in the gamma adjustment, which is the second one I talked about, the red flex adjuster, It's more like your Nikon super cool, mega cool digital gain. And so
hitting the enhance button.
Yeah. So what we're going to get out of a quote gain adjustment in red space is everything moves like we expect. Yep. ISO and exposure are both doing a stop. And in red flex, we're getting this amazingly cool, like a digital top-of-the-line SLR kick-ass thing. Now, I'm sure the algorithms they use are completely bloody different, right? I'm not saying that for a second they are. But it's very important for you as somebody in the red community to understand the difference between those two. Because once I go into red space, which is a good enabler for these other two really kicking ass, I can say to the director now who's sitting beside me, so what did you think about this shot? You say, well, it's a bit dark. And I say, well, how would you like it to look? And you say, I'd say
lighter.
Yeah, and I say, okay, so it's not like an outdoor shot where we're in the desert, we want it to feel blown out. We want it to actually just feel like there's more light.
Yeah,
more so light. I know that I should be in red flex so I can pull this off. I give him 500 ISO instead, and it just looks good.
Yeah.
And I know what's happening is that I'm not hitting my clip. Now, I may still want to do some stuff with DRX for the highlights and all the other things we've ever talked about before. That's all cool. But I certainly can't work in flex the way I worked before. Well, I mean, I can, but I just need to pay attention that I actually am doing what I guess you kind of think of as like tone mapping. It's almost like high dynamic range adjustment but it's clever enough to not screw my highlights on my blacks, but it's a lot more than just a simple gamma that you would do in, say, a base light.
So, yeah, if you're going to spit out a whole bunch of DPXs to go to an online session or to go somewhere else, you can essentially go through them all and tweak them all and raise or lower ISO without really pushing anything off the chart and knowing that you're really going to still have the full range of image to work with.
Yeah, you've totally nailed it. This lets me get a better transfer happening. In other words, if Jason wanted to grade this on a DaVinci, which, you know, would be a completely sensible thing to do, my process of prepping these files for him and transferring them out has become more important because I have more control now than even we had before to produce for him a great base upon which to grade in DaVinci. And I'm doing things here that DaVinci will not be able to do because by the time I leave Red World and I go out to DPX, all of these options are baked in, and he's just getting a file out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I really want to hit this because I think it's incredibly important. The one thing that I think has been really sucking in the red world is people have been saying it doesn't kind of matter that much about the transfer of the files from, say, you know, how I shot it to where I'm grading. It's just it gets done by a less important employee of the process, right? And so I get people saying to me, "Man, I've got this stuff and it's kind of looks kind of geeky. How'd you transfer it?" Oh, I don't know. Somebody just did that. And I'm like, well, I don't understand how you could not pay attention to that. Well, now it's even more the case. The transfer of the red footage, while simple, you know, a lot of flexibility there. So if you're not in the position to do that well, then, you know, don't do it at all kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Like it's like film transfer. If you transfer it well, then you have really great opportunity for grading it. If you transfer it badly later on in Telecine or wherever else, you're not going to have the same flexibility that you would have had if somebody had been paying attention at this stage.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
So look, I hope that hasn't been too complex for you guys. I tried, like life itself, to not go too into technical terms, but I do think it's important to try and understand it.
Yeah, no, I got through it.
Did you?
God. Yeah, I asked a couple of mildly pertinent questions, so I'm happy.
No, you're on the money.
Yeah, look, I think main thing is that
I can relax now.
No, look, well, that all sounds good. Sounds like they've improved that for the better. And now, what I was saying, my earlier question was, if you're not going through the red once scratch is happening. If you're going through a scratch system to get your R3D files out to DaVinci or out to online.
Yep.
What has changed with the way the camera?
Well, I can't discuss Scratch because it's not released yet.
Okay.
Their version.
No, I'm not talking about Scratch. I'm talking about, obviously, we've seen how RedCine, Red Alert has.
But you see, all the this is a new camera crap, which, you know, I accept as valid marketing. All that pivots on what we just discussed, right?
Yeah.
Because all the other stuff to me, like the button works and the dial works and stuff, is all very well and good. But I mean, bottom of the day, end of the day, it's your quality of your images, right? It's just like how magnificent do your pictures look that really is where the, you know, tire hits the road. And so my point is that processing happens off the Red.
Yeah.
Because the Red camera shoots raw. And that processing has to be, you know, well set up by the Red. But I can tell you, I'm pretty much sure I'm allowed to say this, the actual specs on the chip didn't change. Yeah, this hasn't actually changed. This build has not changed the gamut of colors that the chip is grabbing.
Right. Okay.
This is changing the processing that's happening, and it's bloody cool. I mean, it's very, very cool maths. Yeah. But it gets cool, in my personal opinion, when it hits the decoding of the Red files into the pretty pictures that we're all going to watch.
Yep, sure.
And that's where these new Red Flex and Red Space exist. Now, there are some things that have changed on the camera, of course, but, you know, for me, that right there, that's the, okay, that was just insanely clever.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at, that obviously we're seeing some changes in Red Alert, but not, there's nothing major difference in the way the R3D is being encoded in terms of sort of color space.
Okay, so for the, I don't know this for a fact, but one could guess that there's some prep work for this happening in the camera.
Little.
Because the R3Ds are no longer compatible.
Sure. Right?
They're new R3D format, effectively. So they had to do work in the camera to be able to do this. But on the camera itself, you don't go, wow, I'm suddenly at 7K when I was at, you know, 3 before.
Yeah.
Where it really is amazing is in the image quality that you get out the other end, because they allow you now to work, and as I say, to pull it off, you need to respect the fact that they have a better matrixing format, being the Red Space. But hey, you know, I mean, it's early in the release of Build 16, and there's, I'm sure, a lot more to come. And quite frankly, you know, it's quite possible I got some of that wrong. I don't think I did. You know, it's early days, as I say.
Sure. Yep. And obviously, there's going to be. There's two parts to it. There's the QuickTime part of it as well. There's all the other little plugins and bits and pieces that you have to.
Yeah, I mean, we are not. This is not a Red. How can I put this? I'm not working for Red. This is us commenting on the stuff.
Yep.
You know, I have no proprietary knowledge of the code underneath. It's you know, but anyone who's, you know, a uber geeky wanker like me, you can piece together what they're doing because it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But we should probably move now away from geeky stuff to people that actually shoot real nice pictures.
Yeah, okay. So moving into the Red Room. Actually, I spoke to a fair few people. I've been doing a bit of backlogs of Red Rooms. I've spoken to Vienna and Copenhagen and LA and Tokyo. So there's some great interviews coming up. The first one for this ep is a guy called Ken Michael. He's a very cool guy doing a lot of indie stuff and clips and things. And he's a bit of a one-man band. He does, well, obviously he has a bit of a crew behind him, but he, former child star, composes his own music, edits, shoots, and he's pretty seriously into the post side of things as well. So it's a real sort of quite an all-rounder and excellent talker, shall we say.
And you know, I think it's really great that so many people have been interested in having a seat in the Red Room.
Yeah, look, it's been great. It's made it a lot easier to track people down and say, oh, I just have to, you know, just mention Red Room and Red Center, and it has sort of made things a little bit easier. Oh, yeah, okay, I know what you're talking about. So, yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to relaxing and listening to this. Now I've got past my complicated explanation.
You're so. Yeah, okay. Here's Ken.
Okay, thanks for joining us, Ken, in the Red Room.
Hey, how's it going?
Love Red Center. I'm usually listening to it while I'm processing red footage or doing some other kind of like task that without Red Center would be very sort of boring and tedious. So
excellent. good to hear. All right. Well, let's get started. What number red do you have and why did you buy it?
I actually have two reds, one in my possession and another one on order. And the first one that I have is serial number 187. So it was an early one. But the funny thing is that here in the U.S., 187 is actually the cop code for murder, homicide. So that's the one I got. So I like to tell people I'm murdering people with my, you know, visual skills or something cheesy like that.
Excellent. Code 187. How do you know what the code for 187 is?
It's a popular thing in hip-hop music, or it was in the late 80s and early 90s, hip-hop term, and, you know, there were a lot of movies that sort of, like, you know, promoted that code. Right. So, yeah. Excellent. Sort of like 5150 is crazy, as you know, as well, sort of like mentally disturbed. So I don't know why I know all these things, but...
I don't know why. Okay. So why did you order it?
Well, basically, I'm a indie filmmaker, / editor, director, shooter. I do post audio work. I also am a film composer. I was a child actor on TV shows here in the States back in the 90s. And
what show?
I was on The Parenthood with Robert Townsend, which was on the WB, and I did a couple of movies, The Super with Joe Pesci and Boomerang with Eddie Murphy.
Wow.
So, yeah, just, you know, a bunch of stuff. And so I've been a filmmaker for a long time, a composer and a musician. But I've always owned my own gear. And with owning the gear, I've also been, a super tech nerd as far as all the technological workings behind all the technology to sort of enhance the art, you know, to sort of close the gap between the creative mind and the technical mind to actually get the product out there. And so... along with the music stuff and the audio stuff and teaching myself filmmaking, and I was a DV kid, so I had the VX1000, you know, like a month after it came out, which was Sony's first DV camera, and I actually, you know, did a short film that won a bunch of awards back in 97 on this VX1000 with the Steadicam JR, doing all kinds of crazy stuff, and was tapped by Spike Lee's producer to be able to be a digital consultant for him on Bamboozled.
Wow.
From that short. So I've just, you know, I've been like this digital kid for such a long time and really dreaming about what digital filmmaking could be. And so, you know, I did a feature on the Varicam a few years ago and fell in love with HD, obviously. And the whole Apple HD over FireWire Panasonic connection was just, you know, such an exciting development for me. And then I heard about the Red. I went to their thing at NAB, their presentation, and I really was really enamored by their philosophy, what they were trying to do, the technology, making that leap, and then also making it affordable. And then I saw that Ted Shilowitz was on board and Graham Natress. And then I was like, okay, well, they're actually really for real then. And I put my reservation in. And so now I've got the camera and it's literally everything that I've been actually dreaming of as a filmmaker, as an indie, you know, digital filmmaker for many, many, many years. And I think it's amazing what they've been able to do. And even just, you know, since the camera came out in what, September?
Yeah.
Till now, you know, the amount of improvements that they're making and all that stuff is just phenomenal.
Right. Well, thanks for coming. Good answer. I mean, you've touched on it, but what projects are you shooting with it?
Well, for the last 6 months since I've had the camera, I've just been immersed in testing, in all kinds of geekdom. So I'm actually extremely well-versed in all the technical stuff on Red and how to get like the best image out of it and how to do the post-process. And I'm friends with all the guys over at Plaster City. So, you know, we do a lot of talking about like, you know, workflow and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I have a couple of music videos in the pipeline over the next few months. I have a short film of mine that I need to do by the end of the summer. And then hopefully my feature, my second feature towards the end of the year. So a lot of stuff. And then the second camera's coming, I guess, in the next month or so. And then, you know, I'll be rock and rolling. Of course, being on Red User like a crack addict definitely helps to know about any little, you know, smidgen of an issue that's actually happening. So
what other gear did you get with it?
Let me see. I had to, you know, all my gear was really, you know, from the DV world. So I, you know, HVX 200. So I had, you know, the little tripod, and I had, you know, the steady tracker type of thing. So I actually had to get new tripod, matte box, follow focus, and I also got an action cam.
Oh yeah, cool.
Yeah, the action cam is fantastic.
The red version.
Yes, fantastic. I mean, you know, just so well built, so well made, and those guys are, you know, really, really awesome over there. One of the big things about the red version is that it allows you to use a lot of the production pack right. to mount it and rig it, and then, of course, you can use the red LCD instead of having a third-party monitor and all that stuff. So yeah. So that was a great accessory. Got the Red Rock matte box on order.
You're sorted.
Yeah, exactly. and the ViewFactor motorized follow focus.
Oh, yes.
I have that on.
Yep.
Yeah, very excited about that. And I got the 18 to 50 red lens.
Yep.
PL mount. I got the 300 millimeter. And then I got the Nikon mount. And so I love that. And I'm very addicted to the whole, you know, Nikon, you know, SLR lens thing. So I have a 17-35 zoom and 24, 50, 85, and 135 primes. And they look gorgeous. It's just, you know, it's just such a different vibe than, you know, say the red lens or even, you know, ultra primes or super speeds and, you know, cooks and all that kind of stuff. So.
Sure. And I bet they look good.
They look fantastic. I can't wait for that follow focus, though, because the focus throw on the 17-35 is like minuscule.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very difficult to focus. But
so you mentioned that you're cutting your own stuff. So you're basically taking it from go to woe and cutting it and doing your own grades and doing everything in-house.
Exactly. Yeah, like just to give you an example, the first feature I did, which I shot, directed, edited, did all the audio post, all the music, color correction, onlining and getting it to the distribution house for mastering by myself.
Well done. Okay, well, take us through that workflow then.
Either shooting the CF cards or the drive, and bringing it in. I have a, you know, like a Mac Pro here, 8-core, with 4 drives, 3 rated as one sort of project drive, and then the other one is a sort of system and other files. Copy it. I have a clone set up, so it automatically is, you know, all the footage is in 2 places. I back up to LTO3A, Quantum's drive that has the built-in FTP server, which is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then sort of depending on how long the project is, like I've shot some sort of, you know, internal vanity music videos type of stuff over the last couple of months. And so depending on how much footage and if I want a grade on it before I start cutting, I'll either export to ProRes out of RedCine to 1K ProRes files, or I have a compressor droplet that will transcode all the proxies over to ProRes.
Right.
I think the proxies are a great concept. I just personally like having ProRes files that can go anywhere separate of the actual R3D files.
Yeah.
And I like being able to, you know, if I need to do multi-clipping and all that kind of stuff, I don't want to have to deal with all the extra overhead of dealing with the proxies. Plus, you know, being able to go out of RedCine with a nice look to it also helps, I think, the creative process when you're cutting, because you can actually feel the mood of the scene and all that stuff. So I do that. Quick tip on the RedCine thing that I've actually been posting a lot of on Red User, because Jim actually had said that you want to put your display size always to, you know, the draft, the 1/4 quality, no matter what you're rendering out, draft or standard or full quality.
Right.
But you actually have to match the display setting to the level of debayer that you're doing. So if you're doing a standard debayer, like the half resolution debayer, then your display should be on half,
right.
Half high. If you're doing full, then your display actually should be on full. that actually gives you the fastest processing times.
That's the benefit of doing it, does it? It makes the processing faster.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you're doing full debayers and your display is on draft, you're gonna get really long processing times.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I think the display pipeline has something to do with the way it's doing the debayer and all that kind of stuff. So that's the way that, you know, if you're doing standard on an 8-core, I can get 3-to-1 processing times, and full debayer is like 16-to-1. So wow. Obviously, it's like, yeah. But that's sort of the fastest times that I've seen. So once I have the new ProRes transcoded files. So then I use Crimson to basically conform back to, I've actually been doing a lot of redline stuff lately for doing sort of the quote unquote online instead of going back to Redcine.
What's redline?
Redline is Red's command line version of Red Alert.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, you know, it's a lot of coding. You open up a terminal window and you type in a bunch of commands, and it'll actually process R3D files for you and do all the transcoding and all that stuff. It's something that you never want to do on a file per file basis, but something like Crimson that can access Redline and tell it all the things to do, it's a great way to sort of automate your rendering process. But the other cool thing is that you can sort of queue master it out to other machines like compressor, and you can also tell it how much you want to saturate your processors. So whereas Redcine won't necessarily use all of the CPU power because it's using a lot of GPU, Redline is just purely just horsepower. And so it's great. It works in the background. I can be processing footage while doing other things, unlike Redcine, where if that's up and it's doing something and you try and switch out of it, most likely it'll probably crash. So I use Redline to actually then take my conformed footage and either round trip it back to Final Cut, or I'll just open that new XML in color and do all my coloring in DPX files.
Right. Color's not exactly, you know, a brilliant sort of piece of kit in my book. I mean, I've only sort of touched on the thing, but it does seem a bit kludgy to my brain.
It does seem it's very sort of non-intuitive, and it looks like you know it doesn't look like anything like a Mac app, basically.
No.
But what I found, though, is that the more coloring that you do in it, the quicker that you get, but then sort of the less you're thinking about the interface, and the interface sort of then like sort of falls
right.
away, and now you're actually just in your coloring
Great.
And your grading and your creative stuff.
So the trick with color then is just to push past that initial kind of interface pain, and you know, there's some sort of light at the end of the tunnel then.
Yeah. It's really quick. It's sort of like how a lot of people think about the Red workflow right now. But once you get past it, and once you sort of figure it out and figure out what's most comfortable for you, then the genius behind Red just opens up in terms of the image quality, the resolution, the cost, all that stuff. And of course, 6 months from now, it'll be great.
Well, you seriously cracked the post side of things. Doing command line color grading is...
It's serious, but, you know, again, thanks to Ian Bloom, you know, with Redline, you don't even have to look at a line of code. You know, I really think that Crimson was the missing link as far as the finishing aspect of it, if you didn't have Scratch, you know, and you weren't doing an HD finish and, you know, proxies were okay for you on that end. Without Crimson, you know, I don't quite know what the workflow would have been on my end. I would have had to invent something, and I really didn't want to do that. And so he did it. And, you know, the entire community thanks him. And apparently he's got some crazy stuff up his sleeve, like to really take Crimson to the next level. I'm excited to see what that comes out to be.
You really are a Red user crackhead, aren't you?
I really am. It's really ridiculous. It's like my girlfriend knows, when I'm on, because she can see the reflection of the Red boards in my glasses. She walks in the room. She's like, "You're on the Red boards again, aren't you?" You know, it's like, and she's a filmmaker too, but she's just like, I can't get into it like that. I can't get into the forums like that. It's just, I don't have an Xbox. I don't have a PlayStation. And I refuse to get them because I know that it's a productivity killer, you know? And but, you know, I got dragged into Red User. The positive thing is that I have all this information in my head about every little thing.
Okay, so are you going to stick with your Red One or are you going to bump it up to an Epic?
You know, even before Jim said, you know, no, we will upgrade, we will do a sensor upgrade on the Red One to get, you know, the benefits of the new sensor technology.
Yeah.
Which I think is amazing. And then, of course, you know, being able to trade in your Red One for full credit towards Epic, that's insane. That in itself is, I would say, about as good as anything in terms of, you know, obsolescence being obsolete. I don't know if... You know, if I'm going to upgrade to Epic, I still think it's really sort of far away. But, you know, I want to see Epic before I even make a decision. Because right now, you know, what they're doing with software improvements to the codec is almost like having a new camera every time they release a new firmware build.
I'm sure we'll be able to get a better look at Epic before it's actually released. And, you know.
Exactly. Who knows? I'm actually really excited about Red Ray. That's what I'm all
sure, yeah, as an independent guy, as you say, if you're doing that whole post path, you can spit your whole film out the other end in full 4K and then take that to a cinema and plug it straight into the projectors.
Exactly.
Okay, so lastly, where can people find you?
Codecraft.com, CodeKraft.com. That's sort of my website where I have a bunch of stuff that I've done and some stuff that I need to put up to update. But yeah, that's sort of where I reside. And
Red User or Twitter or?
Yeah, I'm on Red User as Ken Michael. That's my screen name there. I haven't even checked out Twitter, but I was interested in it just hearing you guys talk about it on Red Center. So I might have to check that out.
Yeah, you don't have the time for Twitter.
Yeah.
Once you start.
Yeah, you. It's the end of it.
Well, thanks again, Ken. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, man. Had a good time.
Appreciate it.
Okay. So, well, yeah. Thanks for doing that. It's great.
No problem. It's good fun.
So, look, we've run very long this week because of the long discussion of Build 16, but I guess that was going to happen.
Yeah.
We're going to do some other stuff next week, especially catch up on some of the stuff we promised for this week, which we didn't cover.
Yes, we're going to geek out again on shutters and things. But again, it's not so Red-centric. It's really just sort of overview of the whole thing and how the Red side, the way the Red handles things relates to, I guess, what I'm and a lot of people are used to in how it would relate to their stills cameras or film cameras. And also we've got an interview from DP Peter Holland, an Australian guy who shot the first Australian Red feature.
You like Peter?
Yeah, he shot the first feature shot in Red in Australia, and he's went out to set to talk to him. That was a great interview. And so, what's up with you next, Mike? You're heading off.
I am going to be taking our Red to China on tomorrow. So
right.
I fly to China, and so I'm looking forward to that. And you're going to some exotic location yourself.
Yeah, Melbourne.
Sorry?
Melbourne.
That would be Melbourne, right.
Yeah. My next shoot is actually on Red, not because I'm a fanboy, but because it's, again, it's sort of kids and things, and we want to run a couple of cameras, and we want to, obviously, I'm not sure how it is in the rest of the world, but obviously here in Australia we have... Yeah, rightly so, child welfare laws that say if we're shooting with children of a certain age that you have very limited on-set time with them, very limited in front of camera time.
I have no problem with that, actually. I think that's completely valid.
Absolutely. So, hence, you know, Red would be a good call for not having to reload every 5 minutes, every 4 minutes, and also shoot quietly, shoot fairly stealthily, and we'll have a couple of those on set, so that should be interesting.
So, sorry for running over, but we do appreciate you guys being with us, and we've had a lot of really good feedback through various forms, emails and blogs and on Twitter, and we thank you guys for taking the time to...
Fantastic. Makes it worthwhile. Thank you for everyone who's had some kind words to say.
Appreciate it. Now, where can they find stuff to do with us?
Okay. Well, we're both on Twitter. I'm Wingrove, and you're Mike Seymour.
Mike Seymour with no space in between.
With no space. And
that's not a very confusing one, actually. And under FX Guide, if you go to FX Guide along the bar at the top, you'll see podcasts. And if you go down to Red Center, on those, you'll see the home for the Red Centre stuff, including the show notes. And I want to flag that because, Jace, you do a great job with the show notes. And
yeah, it's actually quite good fun too. I think there's obviously a lot of the stuff we're talking about is, you know, pretty visual and gear and all that sort of stuff. So there's we won't just put web links in there. If you're listening along, probably a good idea to download the show notes and have a look at the shots of the gear we're talking about. And if we're talking about, we should put some of those. We should put the color space curves and all.
Well, graphs, I think we might do is actually put a shot of us shot on Build 16 from the Red Camera in.
Yes, indeed. Jim's been rolling some footage while we've been talking.
Now, we obviously can't, in a PDF, put in vast 4K files, but what I'm going to do is put in a few examples of the difference between the ISO adjustment and the exposure adjustment and some screen grabs from Red Alert. So that'll make, hopefully, a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, it should be. It's so worth having a look there.
But if you want to get really in-depth with Red stuff, and obviously, you know, a bit of a plug here, but of course we do this stuff hardcore with high resolution HD videos each week at FXPHD. Yeah. And FXPHD is just finishing up this term, and as of June 30 we'll be starting the new term and letting you know what all the new classes are and stuff. We've got some amazing stuff to coming, so in about 10 days time. So next one we'll go through that, and I'll explain the Red course that we've got coming up in PhD.
Awesome.
Basically, a lot of this stuff I learn because we're doing it for PhD.
Right, and plug for me, jasonwingrove.com, online reel, all that sort of stuff.
I like your reel. It's a good reel.
Yeah.
I like that shot of you, the black and white one in the window, and the arty thing that you've got on your website.
A shot out of into a rental car wing mirror while I'm waiting for somebody.
It's a good shot.
Yeah, no, it's nice.
It's kind of offensive that you're, as a director, able to take a happy snap out of a window on a rental car. It looks that good. I hate you for these reasons.
I think it's just black and white. It makes everything cool.
No, it's good. You've got obviously you've got a really good eye. Well, thanks for taking time to sit with us and listen to us. And if you've got end, we appreciate it.
Yep, red@fxguide.com. If you've got any comments, feedback, let us know. Something you want to talk about, if you've got a piece of gear you want to review, or something we've missed, something we've got wrong, something we've got right.
Or some area of cinematography that you think we're not covering in relationship to Red production, that'd be great.
Yep, love to hear from you.
Until next time, which will probably be slightly late because I forgot to get back from China.
Yeah,
probably about 10 days time.
Yes, and I come back from Melbourne about the same time. So
yeah, we'll catch you then. See ya.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, please email us red@fxguide.com. Copyright 2008 FX Guide LLC.